Hello. This is going to be an update style episode because I have a variety of different things that I want to share with you. I'm going to talk a little bit about my health. Nothing major, just all little tweaks and things going on in my life. I'm tired, and I talked about this last episode, and it's something I'm wondering, like, is there an issue here, or is it just that I'm not getting enough sleep? I think it's that. I think that I have been taking on a lot. I've been having trouble balancing my bedtime. One interesting thing that I have fallen into as a pattern recently that I'm really trying to observe is that when I get tired, I start wanting some stimulation, which makes sense. I think the exhaustion's not necessarily physical all of the time. It's sometimes mental. And I've been on this journey for years trying to figure out how my brain works. I've been exploring neurodivergence. And I was thinking recently how I still feel very confused. I was really identifying as neurodivergent for a while. And then probably after I started seeing a new therapist last year, I started to wonder, am I neurodivergent? Because unlike my previous therapist, she doesn't really seem to think so. But this is a great thing about health, is that so many people, including medical professionals, have different opinions. So there's that balance of getting the medical professional's opinion and then also figuring out what your opinion about your own body is. And I think that's a big theme in my life right now. For example, I feel a bit physically tired right now. I don't fully understand why. I thought I got a decent amount of sleep, but I don't think it was high quality sleep. So today has been a struggle for me. However, I'm able to record this podcast right now because I find it mentally stimulating. So I can push through my exhaustion when there's stimulation. And that goes to another point. I've been using YouTube as a viewer, not as a creator. I've been using it every single day, and I've become hooked on using shorts, which are essentially YouTube's version of TikTok. And I have mixed feelings about this. As I've shared in previous episodes, I cut myself off of TikTok at the end of 2022 because it turned into an addiction for me. After about 3 years of using the platform, and I would just find myself spending 30 minutes to an hour doing nothing but watching TikToks, and it didn't feel good. At some point recently, I started scrolling through YouTube Shorts, and now it's become a daily thing. So every time I get tired, every time I'm looking for stimulation, I open up YouTube, and it's basically getting back to where I was with TikTok again. So I've been observing this because I think a huge part of social media usage is about awareness, checking in with ourselves. Does this serve us? Just because you're doing something for entertainment, for stimulation, and it might be seen as a form of procrastination or distraction or mindless entertainment, doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. But it's tricky for me because I identify it as an addictive pattern. I think the difference is the algorithm with YouTube works a little differently than TikTok. I don't find it as addictive because it doesn't quite keep me hooked. YouTube doesn't really know what I like. And maybe that's because I just started using it again, but it doesn't feel like I can get quite as hooked on it. But I still find myself searching for more. And this is a big way that social media works. It is endless. And our brains are treating it very similar to how we might gamble. In fact, it has been shown that a lot, if not many, social media platforms are modeled after slot machines. And as a slot machine player myself, you may or may not know this about me, but I do enjoy playing slot machines every once in a while at casinos. It's that experience of not knowing what reward is coming next, and you'll keep pulling the slot machine lever or pushing the slot machine button. And on social media, you'll keep scrolling in case you hit something that's exciting, and thus the dopamine effect. And that's where I'm using social media. I'm looking for that dopamine hit. I'm looking for a video that makes me laugh or scratches this itch in my brain wanting a certain amount of information. And that leads me to some other updates. It ties into a goal that I have been working towards for the past year. Took a little bit of break with it and now I'm getting back on track. It seems to me a very spring and summer thing, and then I lose a lot of interest in it in fall and winter, at least I did last year. So in 2023, springtime, around this time last year, I started to get really into hiking. And at that time, I wasn't working a lot, so I had a ton of time available, and I was going on a new hike almost every single day in the Los Angeles area. And I started to feel really excited by that. I had this mission of checking off all of the trails on the app All Trails, and I achieved that within a certain radius. I think I went on 50 or 60 trails in a very short period of time, like maybe 2 or 3 months, and it felt awesome. And then around that same time, I was thinking about a long-term goal of climbing Mount Everest one day. And this ties into YouTube Shorts, because I do find that the benefit of YouTube is learning things. And given that I'm becoming very interested in hiking, I'm also passionate about camping, and there's this crossover with backpacking. So I've been thinking about doing backpacking trips, and I'll pause there for a second to go back to Mount Everest. It's something I'm very curious about. I'm not that attached to it. It's not this huge bucket list item for me, but I would like to sometime in the next 10 years attempt it. And attempting it either means training for it, and through training, I may discover I don't actually want to climb Mount Everest. I may actually go out to Mount Everest and literally attempt it. For me, that latter seems the most likely, because the idea of Mount Everest is not about getting to the summit. I don't feel that attached ego-wise to it. In other words, there's a lot of people who think that climbing Mount Everest is about your ego, because it's the tallest point in the world, and it's also known as very dangerous. Every year, people die summiting or attempting to summit Mount Everest. And so, as I've discovered through research, a big opinion from the masses that you would only climb Mount Everest if you had a death wish, or you would only climb Mount Everest if it was so in your ego. And I actually held this belief too. In fact, it's in an early podcast episode I did after reading an article about this big traffic jam of people trying to get to the summit and how dangerous that's become, because it's increasingly become more popular to climb Mount Everest, maybe because of social media. Maybe people think, ooh, this looks like a cool thing to say I did. I don't have that feeling, actually. To me, Mount Everest is about resiliency. It's about getting to know myself on a deeper level. It's about wondering what is possible for me, pushing myself to a huge limit. And the accomplishment sounds really interesting. And it's interesting because if I were to summit Mount Everest, I would be curious what life would be like afterwards. I'd be curious to know what that felt like to achieve something that only a few hundred people a year achieve. I don't know. What is that like to train for? What is that like to accomplish? And what is the after? Because that's been a big question throughout the 500 plus episodes of this podcast, is how there are many misconceptions when it comes to success. I, through most of my life, have thought if I can do X, then I will feel Y. And I've discovered over time that's not often the case. I saw a video with Jim Carrey yesterday that I think I've seen before. It was an interview. And essentially, Jim Carrey has spoken about how after a certain point in his successful career as an actor, he realized none of it really matters. And I find that really fascinating, because I grew up watching Jim Carrey and feeling very entertained by him and idolizing him to a certain extent. And to see a person like that share how he didn't really get that much fulfillment, and I don't know if that he used that exact word, but he did talk about how that's not where the happiness is. And I think Mount Everest is really about the journey because it takes so much intention. You have to plan, or I guess you don't have to, it depends on your circumstances, but A, it's quite expensive. I think at the minimum, it might be 30 grand to climb because you have to get all the special gear, you have to hire Sherpas. There's a lot of ethical considerations there too, in terms of risking not just your life, but other people's lives. So it's very involved. It's not something most people can decide to do and just go do it. If you have a ton of money, maybe you could, but you still have to train for it. It requires strength, flexibility, and that resiliency I mentioned. It's not an easy thing, and that's why a lot of people feel some pride in accomplishing that. But I imagine the most reward of Everest is that journey, and I think that's the appeal for me. Realistically, it is something I think maybe I could do in 3 to 5 years if I really wanted to. If I started hiking every single day, maybe I could do it in a year. I don't know if I could save up enough money to do it in the way I would want to do it. But for me, there's the financial consideration of how long would it take me to save for that? And then how long would it take me to train? How long would it take me to learn about Mount Everest? There's just so many factors. And that's what's very appealing to me. But I also wonder if I do in fact summit Mount Everest and I get down safely, how would I feel after that? Would life feel richer after accomplishing something like that? Or would there be a little bit of a sadness? Would I feel like this sense of what's next? What's on the other side of a big accomplishment, I guess? Now, I've had guests on the show, one I know for sure, who's climbed Mount Everest, Kaysen, who's somebody I absolutely adore. I just saw Kaysen a few weeks ago at the Natural Products Expo. He runs a company called Explorer Cold Brew. And if you want to listen to that episode, he talks a little bit about his experience climbing Mount Everest. And so I've spoken to people and I see that there's so much more to life after an accomplishment like that. But I think I've been considering a lot about this feeling that Jim Carrey has been discussing of going through these different stages of life and realizing that it's very life starts to mean something differently to you than it did earlier in your life. And I think that's exciting. I think that's a beautiful thing. But it can also feel very depressing. Like everything I work towards, I got it. And now what? Or I've been working so hard to get to a point and I never got there. Then what does that mean for you? All right. So back to health updates, trying to figure out this tiredness thing. It's frustrating for me because I feel like exhaustion gets in the way of other things I want to do. I have a daily battle weekdays with wanting to have more energy to complete tasks. Most of my energy goes towards completing work tasks because I have a heavy workload. I have people that count on me. I have deadlines. There are consequences. If I don't meet these deadlines and don't complete these tasks, then I will not have the work. People will probably fire me or end work with me, whatever. I feel motivated, but it's not always easy for me because it feels like my body wants to do different things than my mind or responsible life a little bit differently. And that's just been a daily thing. I also love practicing yoga and or going for hikes, but that requires a lot of physical energy. And this is the other thing, by the way, when I think about training for maybe not just Mount Everest, but other mountains I want to climb. For example, I would like to climb Mount Whitney as part of my training. And that's, I forget how tall it is. I think at least 14,000 feet. I'm not sure when that would happen. That's also a pretty involved thing, but that's much more realistic. It's a 4-hour drive for me. I just have to get a permit and there's a few other considerations of how I would accomplish it. But I could probably do that in a year. In the meantime, I might go to Colorado this year and climb some mountains there. So that's something I'm working towards. And I have a goal. It's a short-term goal. And that actually helps me generate energy. In fact, that's a reminder. Something that I find very helpful is if I can plan backwards. So I do have plans in Colorado this year. And I just need to like figure out some logistics with that and then work my way backwards. Like what needs to happen to make all of these goals possible? And since it's a short time away, and I'm a very last minute planner for the most part, I feel a sense of urgency, and thus it's easier for me to make things happen. So that actually can help me push through tiredness. I feel motivated and I feel that sense of urgency. And that actually might be part of that stimulation I was talking about. It starts to make my heart race a little bit and I'm able to move forward with it. I think that's also how I work, not just like in my personal life, but with business. I wait till the last minute. I'm an 11th hour person. I always have been. I have tried to change that about myself. It's just a big struggle for me. I have the most motivation last minute. Anyways, I find myself every day I'm able to push through my tiredness when I get a little bit of that adrenaline rush. But it does tie into yoga too. I mentioned in a recent episode how I didn't end up going to yoga because I felt so tired. Some days though, about an hour before yoga, I feel like there's no way I'm going to have the energy to go. And then 5 minutes before I need to leave for class, suddenly there's energy. And I think it's because that's my version of the 11th hour, where I'm able to switch into a different mode and build the resiliency at the very last minute. And I know that about myself, but every single day I come up against this question. And it's funny to, on some level, know yourself, but at another level, still be surprised by it. Now, another struggle for me is cleaning, organizing, tidying. Right now, my home is a chaotic mess and it's causing me stress and anxiety. I do not like looking at all of my clothes splayed out all over the place. In fact, I'm not recording video with this episode today because my place feels like such a wreck and I don't have enough energy to even do some simple things to appear on camera. That's an example of it's just not worth it to me. It doesn't matter enough. But I haven't found that motivation to clean. However, in a couple days, I have people coming over for dinner, and I guarantee that I will suddenly have all of this energy to clean a couple hours before they arrive. So I'm looking forward to that. That's good to know. And it's oftentimes helpful to put things into place that force you to, or get you into that mode, that headspace that you need to accomplish things. Now, I have tentative plans with a friend this weekend that are working against me in an interesting way. My friend wants to go for a hike together, but they want to do it early in the morning, relatively. And I am dreading that. I don't think I'm actually going to make it happen because I've been feeling so tired. I want to just sleep in that morning and recover. So I've had to make some adjustments. I don't know if we're going to end up hiking because of my friend's schedule, but it's been interesting how just thinking about doing that hike with this person, and it's not specifically about them. It's, I want to go hiking, but I have anxiety about when we go hiking. And that drains me. I find that anxiety starts to show up and interrupt my sleep, which leads me to a sleep update with health. I started working, or is working the right term? Let's use it. I started working with a new therapist because my old therapist left the center that he was at that's connected to my insurance. And I also thought it might be nice to try a different therapist, get some different opinions. We've talked about the neurodivergent side of things, for example, but our main focus in our sessions is around my sleep challenges. If you did not know this about me, I have been sleepwalking the great majority of my life, and I've been trying to get to the bottom of why. I've done a few episodes on this that document a variety of things I've tried, and I've come to the big curiosity about, is my sleep interruptions that I experience from sleepwalking and sleep talking and essentially not getting super restful sleep, is that the result of psychological distress? And that's been the big thing that my new therapist and I are trying to figure out, and it's taken months and months, and we're slowly unraveling some new things. And it's fascinating because we've done a little bit of dream work together, and this therapist helped me realize some themes that were happening that weren't obvious to me. By describing my dreams to this therapist and talking through them, I'm starting to make some connections and realize some really deep-seated fears that are causing me anxiety, stress, these things that I have not brought to the surface in my waking life. It's going to sound really obvious, but they are coming up in my sleep. So my reoccurring dream pattern has been surveillance. And I actually felt really vulnerable sharing this with my therapist at first because I felt like I was experiencing paranoia. I've had reoccurring dreams. I guess like the dreams feel so intense, they wake me up essentially. And sometimes I wake up only a little bit, which leads me to the sleepwalking. But sometimes I literally wake up. So there's like different versions of this. It's a little hard to explain, but essentially I either remember a dream, like most people experience, they might remember something stressful in their dreams, or I will sleepwalk because of that dream. And then the third thing I experience, either all in the same night or one or the other, is I wake up and I'm alert and I'm still not sure if my dream was real or not. Hope that explanation makes sense. So the surveillance dream has been really unsettling because there are times when I wake up and I am convinced that somebody's watching me. And this is where the vulnerability came in. I thought, am I experiencing paranoia here? Instead of feeling judged by my therapist, good thing, you don't want your therapist to judge you. But the therapist pointed out that I have some fears around consequences and some really internalized feelings around other people's judgments. My dreams often are about me doing something and then being found out by somebody else and then having some sort of consequence. And typically it's me doing something that I think is private and then discovering that I've been watched and I'm either embarrassed that somebody caught me doing something. And generally it's pretty benign. It's not like I'm committing a crime or doing something really weird. It's usually just something pretty innocent. But because somebody in my dreams discovers me doing this or is watching me doing this, then the consequence is that I feel judged by them or I get in trouble. That was my dream last night. Without going into the details, somebody that I've been working with showed up in my dreams and in a really weird way was like, I don't even know what the word is for this. They saw me doing something that I thought was private and it was like a remote setting. So they remotely caught me doing something. And I woke up in the middle of the night really afraid of this. And it took me a while to recognize that it was just a dream. And I've been processing it all day. But I realized that there's a combination of things. There's the old fears that have probably been there lingering my whole life. And then there's also the newer things of, or maybe I'm projecting my like old wounds have projected themselves onto this new person in my life. And I'm afraid that new person is judging my every move. And there's going to be consequences, like I said earlier, of them firing me or not wanting to work with me or criticizing me, on and on, all these different types of consequences. So that's a little sleep update that it's super helpful for me to talk through these things in therapy and have a professional walk me through them and ask questions and notice them and also give me tools, not just to identify something, but also the psychological tools of how can we address this. My therapist is very interested in that inner child work and healing some old wounds that may have started when I was a little girl. It's been fascinating and I'm really grateful. I also started physical therapy. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast, but my doctor, my general practitioner recommended I try physical therapy. I've had chronic pain in my leg for many years. I don't even remember how long it's been. It's been that long. I sprained my ankle as a teenager and did very light physical therapy and probably not enough because my leg has never been the same. And I've often wondered if that accounts for various issues I've had with on the specific side of my body. So I started going to physical therapy about a month ago and it's been so fascinating. If you've never done physical therapy, the experience I've had is starting with an evaluation, being given a set of exercises to do every single day, which, because I often face resistance with exercising, has been the biggest challenge. But it's 10 minutes of exercises to do at home, and they're easy. Still dread doing them. It's hard, but I do them most days. And then I go to physical therapy based on what they recommended for me. I go twice a week, including today. And yes, I am dreading it. I don't want to go, but it's a very pleasant experience. I go for 30 minutes. I have this wonderful, kind physical therapist, and they run me through different activities or exercises, and I'm learning so much about my body. I also notice that the pain has almost entirely gone away in just a month, and that feels like a miracle. Because like I said, I've been struggling with this for so long. And it turned out that I needed to strengthen some muscles in my body that no one has ever pointed out to me. And I'm hitting this place of realization of, wow, I've got my whole life and I wish somebody had pointed this out to me earlier. But I'm very grateful it was pointed out to me now. So essentially, the biggest recommendation from my physical therapist was to strengthen my core. And maybe that sounds obvious, but the specific exercises that have been recommended to me were not obvious things. And to have this physical therapist watch me do each exercise and point out all these little shifts I can make in my body to strengthen it, and also point out what I was doing previously versus how is best for my body, is a game changer. And so that's why in just a month's time, my body is really starting to change. I feel so much stronger. I also feel like my body is starting to look very different. My physical therapist gave me tips, for instance, for noticing my core and engaging it throughout the day. And I've never thought about it that way. Essentially, I would only pay attention to my core in an exercise class such as yoga when the instructor says, engage your core. That's it. So I probably hear that every class I go to. So if I'm in a good week with enough time and energy for it, I will do yoga every day and we'll spend a couple minutes in class focused on the core. You use your core throughout yoga, but the teacher will only prompt you to use your core a few times in class. But essentially what I've learned through physical therapy is I need to be paying attention to my core all day long. While I'm awake, at least, hopefully not while I'm sleeping. And that's changed everything for me. I don't know if this is the experience that other people have, but it has not been mine, okay? I have not paid very close attention to my core. I associate my core with working out. So if I work out for an hour a day, that's when I pay attention to my core. But what about the rest of the day? So now I'm trying to engage my core whenever I walk. I'm trying to engage my core when I sit. I'm just paying more attention to it. And it's amazing how much that shifted for me. And that has really impacted my leg. What the doctors discovered is that I was using certain muscles in my leg like a compensation because of a weak core and putting more stress on my lower back, and my lower back was impacting my leg, and thus I was experiencing all of this different types of pain. And I'm just blown away by one simple change and its impact on my body, and wondering why I didn't know these things. And it's such a great example of you don't know what you don't know, and something that's obvious to one person may not be obvious to others. And one little tip can be an absolute game changer. I'm very excited about that. The other thing that I'm working towards in my life that ties into a lot of the themes today is continuing to check off national parks from my list. If you didn't know this from previous episodes, I'm on a mission to visit all 63 national parks in the U.S. I've been to 51. The 51st national park, I may do a separate episode on because I really enjoy going in depth about my experiences. I visited Death Valley. I think that was in February, and it was great. I have a lot to say about it. So I will put a little pin in this and say, if you are interested, you can tune into that episode. Maybe I'll do that one next. And I next want to visit the Hawaiian national parks, one on Maui and one on the Big Island. And I also want to go to the American Samoa National Park. I've been nervous about planning these trips because it feels, A, very involved. Flying is involved, for instance. It's expensive to fly to American Samoa. It's surprisingly not expensive to fly to Hawaii from Los Angeles. I've also had some concerns ethically about visiting some of these islands. I feel like I've seen a lot of people speaking about the tourist culture. So I want to be very mindful and respectful, much like I briefly mentioned with Mount Everest, there's concerns around the tourist experience in Nepal. It's important to me to learn as much as I can in order to be mindful. And of course, also there's the environmental implications of flying, traveling in general. So that I feel like I have a lot of ignorance around, but I have saved up the money to do these trips. I have most of them planned out already, the details that is. And the biggest obstacle for me is coordinating in terms of camping. I decided that I want to camp at the Hawaiian National Parks, and in American Samoa, I'll probably stay in an Airbnb. And I am very likely to do this on my own because no one in my life either A, wants to go with me, or B, can spend the money or take the time. And I don't want that to get in my way. Doing a trip like this is a lot of time and money, as I mentioned, but also there's the risk factor of traveling by yourself. And as a woman, I've talked about this many times, but I'm not going to let that stop me. Long story short, I am in the process of that. I want to camp. I've had to figure out all these logistics of camping because my goal is to do it through carry-on only. And as a result of that, I'm limited with what I can bring. I discovered that Hawaiian Airlines and Hawaii in general, there are limitations, specifics with certain equipment that you can and can't bring. Then there's the general carry-on rules about how big your bag is. And I'm figuring all this stuff out. I've traveled with carry-on only to Singapore, to Greece, to Costa Rica. Like, I've done that, but never with camping equipment. I'm very excited to plan this all out, and I will definitely do an in-depth episode before and or after that trip. So that will come up soon, and it's exciting just to talk about it. I'm really hoping that I can make this trip happen in the next few months, but there's still a lot of logistics. I think what I'm learning is I have resistance to that because it feels overwhelming, but through past experiences of overwhelming trips, I know I can do it. For example, in 2023? I guess it was. Last year, I went to the Dry Tortugas National Park, which also required a lot of planning. I went there with my mom and my sister. I think I did a whole episode on that. That was a big accomplishment because I didn't know how far in advance you needed to book ferry tickets. And by the time I went to book them, they were all sold out. And I did a ton of research and risked not getting on the ferry. Essentially, I planned this whole trip just in case we could secure standby tickets. And spoiler alert, it all worked out. And it was such a great feeling of accomplishment because my mom, my sister, and I all got on to the ferry through standby. And we were the last people to get those standby tickets. I had to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and wait in line just in the chance that we could get these tickets. And it was just such a great feeling. I also felt very overwhelmed going to and planning Voyageurs National Park last year because there were so many little logistics getting there, and it required me to think about things a little bit differently. It was the first time I had camped in a tent by myself without my car, and I had to book a water taxi. It just felt so overwhelming. It was a little bit more expensive. In hindsight, not very much. I think that cost me like $200 to do that trip. That's like a tenth at least of the price. I think this Hawaiian and American Samoan trip is going to cost me around $3,000, but I am so excited about it. That's a little preview of what's to come and what I'm thinking about. And also, it brings me full circle to YouTube Shorts because I've been using YouTube Shorts to learn about camping, backpacking, hiking, traveling to national parks. And if I approach it more like a research project than mindless entertainment, I feel like I can justify the time I spend on there. So I think I will end it there. to be continued. There are a couple topics that I plan to address in future episodes. So we've got my Death Valley experience. I have an episode I want to do on time. I mentioned this in the previous episodes. I've been thinking a lot about aging, which I'm laughing about because we're aging our entire lives. And yet at certain ages, we think about our age very differently than others. I don't know. Maybe it's because I just had a birthday, but I just find myself spending so much time thinking about what it means to get older. But it's funny to me because we're always getting older. That's something I want to explore more in depth. And I'm also working towards getting guests on the show again. I talked about last week how I have been taking a break from guests just because I've been working so much and I've been tired. It requires a lot of time and energy to have guests on the show, but I'm eager to hear from other people, to learn from them, and to also get back into that flow of those style episodes. That is what's coming up, and I appreciate you listening. I feel good about this episode. That's another little update. I think this is a rare case where I could talk for 45 minutes and not feel super insecure at the end of the episode. I have a little bit of it, and I talked about in the previous episode how that's been my ongoing battle despite this being the 500th and first episode of the show. It's amazing to me how I still feel insecure. I even feel embarrassed a little bit about this podcast. I still feel like this show is not good enough. So when friends tell me that they want to listen to the show, I get so embarrassed. I feel so vulnerable. Like, no, don't listen to it. It's not good enough yet. And it's just really funny to me that after doing all these episodes, the show still doesn't feel good enough. And I guess that's another nice way to wrap this up, because it's connected to that question that I have about Mount Everest and any type of journey and accomplishment. When will it feel fulfilling? When will life feel good enough? Maybe it will never feel fulfilling. Maybe life and ourselves will never feel good enough. I think I've had a goal of essentially reaching a point of feeling really good, feeling worthy, feeling satisfied, feeling successful. Now, fulfillment probably is within reach. I've had guests on the show that have talked about fulfillment being the key, not happiness, not success, but striving to feel fulfilled. I think that is reachable. But at this point in my life, I don't know if I will ever feel like I'm good enough or what I'm doing is good enough. Maybe, but so far feels pretty out of reach. And that's okay. I'm not saying that from a point of self-deprecation. I'm saying like, it actually might be a good thing to never feel good enough, because that means we have something more to strive for. I don't know if that's the answer, but that's how I feel right now. I'm going to see that as a good thing. It's okay that I feel vulnerable and embarrassed and that this podcast isn't good enough. I'm embracing it. It's been there all these years. May never go away. That's okay. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back with another episode at some point soon. Still figuring out my schedule, but if you are subscribed, you'll be alerted. So I guess it doesn't matter what day the show comes out. If you have alerts on, it'll be there when it's there. And then you'll know. I don't know why these things are amusing to me, but that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening, and bye for now.